First, it's the week in Washington, and we're looking at some of the top stories making news in the nation's capital. Senator Kamala Harris, Democrat from California, is Joe Biden's pick to run with him for the White House against Donald Trump and Mike Pence. Harris has been seen as the front runner for the spot for some time and is the first black woman and woman of Indian descent to be on a major party's presidential ticket. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What is your reaction to Biden's choice of Kamala Harris as running mate? Did you follow her campaign for president? What questions do you have about her as a candidate for vice president? Do you think Biden made the right call? How do you think Republicans could or should respond? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll take a look at that story and more with Andy Duren, congressional reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Andy, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, a lot of drama, Andy, to end up with a person who I think a lot of people thought we'd end up with here, right?
Yeah, I don't think this was much of a surprise pick for anyone. I mean, soon after Senator Harris dropped out of the presidential race last year, Vice President Biden said that she was someone he might pick as a running mate. So this has really been months of foreshadowing here leading up to this. So, yeah, no surprises here in Washington.
Let's give a listen to a tweet from the Biden campaign of the likely presidential nominee and the vice presidential nominee about taking the job. Here's a listen.
First of all, is the answer yes?
The answer is absolutely yes, Joe, and I am ready to work. I am ready to do this with you, for you. I'm just deeply honored, and I'm very excited.
And there's a more formal public event going on today. What are some of the pros and cons people are looking at, Andy, for Kamala Harris as a running mate?
I think there are a few things that Democrats have are excited about with Senator Harris. I think, first of all, you know, there is the historic nature of her candidacy. As we mentioned, she is the first black woman and the first woman of Asian descent and the first woman or would be the first woman to be vice president of the United States. So there are a few kind of historic demographic reasons that folks are excited about her. But beyond that, I think Senator Harris is seen as someone in the party who compliments Joe Biden in a few different ways. You know, she was someone who during her time in the Senate has had a real appetite and flair for kind of viral moments, for really hammering folks from the Trump administration in hearings and other forums in ways that kind of lifted her star and gained a lot of attention. So I think there's a lot of excitement around her ability to bring that kind of energy to the ticket and that kind of maybe, you know, public persona and speaking ability to the ticket. So I think those are some of the things that, you know, Senator Harris early on here, people are excited about, Democrats are excited about. I think another thing, too, is she does not pose a major liability to Vice President Biden. She is not someone that is really ripe for attacks from Republicans, that she is some, you know, extremist, far left radical. Obviously, this is something that Republicans already have and will try and tag her with. But she's not someone who has the reputation that some of the other people who are under consideration did in terms of being a little bit more ideological or progressive. So those are kind of the some of the major points right now, I think, in Senator Harris's column.
I want to give a listen to President Trump talking about Kamala Harris from the White House briefing room shortly after the pick became public. The president had referred to the senator as nasty for the way she questioned how now Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh was questioned during his confirmation hearings. Here's a listen.
She's also known, from what I understand, as being just about the most liberal person in the U.S. Senate. And I would have thought that Biden would have tried to stay away from that a little bit, because with what they're doing with open borders and sanctuary cities, where they're trying to protect sanctuary cities, which is also protecting large number of criminals, with all of the things that they're doing, Second Amendment, they want to take away your Second Amendment or modify it to a point where it's essentially no longer the Second Amendment. I would have thought he would have gone a different way.
Those are similar things that what you might expect from President Trump, regardless of the vice presidential pick, right?
Yeah, I think that's, like you said, it is generic to a certain extent. I mean, those are attacks that would be levied and will be levied at Democrats overall in the election season here. But, you know, unlike someone like, you know, an alternative like Senator Elizabeth Warren or Representative Karen Bass, you know, those are two people who have, you know, a longer career in kind of progressive policy spaces and are someone in candidates or they were, you know, possible choices that would have been, you know, a bigger target, I guess, for Republicans in terms of, you know, policy proposals that they would have said are kind of outside the mainstream and too radical for the United States.
We're talking to Andy Duren, congressional reporter for The Wall Street Journal. It's our weekly look at some of the latest stories in national politics. Right now, looking at the Democratic vice presidential pick, Senator Kamala Harris. You can join in with your reaction right now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Nancy is with us in Milwaukee. Nancy, hi.
Hello. I feel that she is just absolutely a wonderful mate for Biden. I feel that she's vibrant, she's smart, she speaks well. I think he couldn't have chosen a better person. And I think that Trump himself is so desperate at this point, he's going to try one of three things to counter the fact that she's been chosen. He's either going to push forward with the vaccine so that he can come off as looking like Mr. Wonderful who has saved America, or he's going to drop out of the race entirely and simply walk away and say, fake media is so terrible I can't even run anymore.
Nancy, thanks a lot for the call. That last one anyway seems like a long shot, talk a little bit about the response. There are definitely people out there on the Democratic side like Nancy, Andy, pretty enthusiastic about the selection of Kamala Harris.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the Biden campaign said yesterday that they raised a record amount of money over, I think it was, you know, a few hours. It was a major fundraising time for them. So this is a selection that is being greeted with a lot of enthusiasm by a lot of Democrats. And I think that's something that, you know, Democrats in general, I mean, one of the things that stood out about the primary election, which obviously Senator Harris participated in, is that, you know, all of the candidates or many of the candidates, you know, obviously people had their preferences, but Democrats in general were relatively enthusiastic about all of the Democrats or many of the Democrats who ran for president. And there does just seem to be a general energy around the ticket overall.
Right. There is the question of the more progressive wing of the Democratic Party disappointed by, you know, a centrist like Hillary Clinton picking a centrist-ish Democrat like Tim Kaine. There were progressives hoping to have somebody further to the left than Kamala Harris. Do you see potential for division like we saw in 2016 this time around?
I think there's certainly the potential for that kind of division. And there are certainly conversations among people on the left about that dynamic you described. But I don't think, at least so far, you know, I haven't seen and I haven't heard some of the kind of more public, you know, pushback and vitriol around this around Biden's campaign and Biden's candidacy, like you did maybe in 2016. I think that there is, you know, that defeating Donald Trump is a really powerful unifying force for Democrats right now. And I think certainly there are Democrats who would have preferred a more progressive or maybe a more liberal selection. I think that right now, certainly Senator Harris is not a drag for Joe Biden in that sense, in terms of I think folks, you know, folks who are of the more progressive persuasion are pretty motivated or seem pretty motivated to defeat Donald Trump.
Thanks for that call, Nancy, at 800-642-1234. We're talking to Andy Duren, congressional reporter for The Wall Street Journal. It's the week in Washington. We're looking at a few of the stories making headlines in national politics. You can join in at 800-642-1234 if you have more reactions to the selection of a running mate for Joe Biden, Senator Kamala Harris. We'll also be talking about a bigger picture, how the vice presidential role has changed over the years. That's coming up later in the show. Also coming up in the week in Washington, still no relief package, no new relief package from Congress when it comes to COVID-19 and the economic damage. Are you hoping to see something? If so, what? 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Wall Street Journal congressional reporter Andy Duren, looking at some of the top national political stories in the news this week. Let's move on to Congress and the ongoing stalemate, Andy, over another round of COVID economic relief. What are the latest happenings or maybe non-happenings?
Yeah, I think there are definitely more non-happenings than happenings right now. I mean, the very latest is that Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin called House Speaker Nancy Pelosi today saying that he wants to restart in-person negotiations over another relief bill. Those negotiations ended, or at least briefly ended, on Friday after Republicans and Democrats were unable to reach an agreement. But Speaker Pelosi said that she did not want to meet with Secretary Mnuchin or other folks from the administration because she doesn't think that Republicans are willing to spend, or she still does not think that Republicans are willing to spend what she sees as the necessary amount on the next bill. She wants Republicans to commit to essentially spending at least $2 trillion. They've proposed something in the realm of $1 trillion. Democrats are looking at something that's more than $3 trillion. And so Democrats right now are saying that they should meet in the middle and that Republicans should, you know, up their ante and Democrats will lower their ante. But so far, the Trump administration and congressional Republicans have not been willing to go up to that level yet. And so we are where we are still.
And the president did these executive orders. You know, that's a limited power. It tackles some of the issues that Congress is working on, certainly not all of them. Is there any indication that that's either moving people to try to make a deal or telling some people, OK, he did that, we don't need a deal anymore?
I think it's taken a little bit of pressure off in some senses. I mean, what President Trump did over the weekend will not have or has not had any immediate impact on his jobless aid order may, or executive action on jobless aid may, you know, eventually start paying out some things to some employment assistance to folks. But in general, both sides still want to do something by legislation, and they both acknowledge that executive actions are no replacement for legislation. There's a whole laundry list of policy topics that the executive actions didn't address or even try and address, things like funding for schools, things like funding for vaccines, things like aid for small businesses. So there's a bipartisan desire to pass legislation. But so far, the issues over what that exact legislation should look like exactly remain too broad. And so there's been a little bit of impetus with the executive actions, but not enough, I guess, to really get things going.
It's our week in Washington. We are talking about some of the big news in national politics with Andy Duren from the Wall Street Journal. We invited your calls and reactions to the selection of Senator Kamala Harris as the Democratic vice presidential candidate, presumptive, I guess, until the convention. Let's bring out a couple more callers now. Jeff is with us in Superior. Jeff, hi.
Yeah, thank you. I actually plan to vote for Trump, but This election will help Biden win the Electoral College. They may flip Missouri, but I think they definitely will flip Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Florida, and that gives Biden the electoral victory. That's all they need to do, and this helps them secure that because she's perceived as a African-American woman, but she's not, but she's a person of color, and she will get there are more women in the United States than men, so I mean, they will get a good turnout, and the Democrats, I think, will win this election.
Jeff, thanks for the call. So reaching out to key demographic groups, Jeff says, in key swing states, Andy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's certainly what the Biden campaign is hoping. I'm sure that they are very hopeful that they will win those key swing states. As Jeff mentioned, I think, you know, unlike, I guess, some historical vice presidential picks, though, Senator Harris's selection is a little different in that she is not from any of those swing states. You know, historically, kind of the old model of vice presidential picks is you would pick someone from a state, you know, who represented a state or was from a state that you wanted to win. And, you know, California is somewhere that Biden can pretty comfortably predict that he'll win. So it will be interesting to see, you know, if and how, Senator Harris, can motivate maybe certain groups of voters or appeal to certain groups of voters. But in that sense, she's also maybe an untraditional pick.
Thanks, Jeff. We'll go to Cyril now in Madison. Cyril, hi.
Hello.
What'd you want to bring up?
Yeah, I just wanted to bring up one point that maybe hasn't been emphasized too much, is that she is the daughter of parents from different countries and different cultures. That makes her a first-generation American, and that may have a lot of appeal to people who are interested in the issue of immigration and developing a fair immigration policy.
Thanks a lot for that call, Cyril. And I think, Andy, there's a classic version of a political story in America, like, you know, child of immigrants made good. Is that a theme you think we'll be hearing a lot?
I think that's certainly something we can expect, as the Biden-Harris campaign begins to really, sell the public or pitch the public on Senator Harris and Senator Biden. I'm sure we'll hear a lot about her, her family's background. And I think in general, Biden had said that he would pick a woman for his vice president. And I think in general, both in the presidential election and even beyond that in congressional races, Democrats have sought to draw a contrast between their slate of candidates across the board and the Democrat demographics of those candidates in terms of having many more women who run as Democrats, having many more people of color who run as Democrats than Republicans who are, predominantly a party populated by white men. And so I'm sure that that's kind of, whether that's an explicit contrast or a kind of an unspoken contrast that Democrats are drawing between, their ticket, which does include a woman of color, and then the Republican ticket, which is two white men.
Thanks a lot for your calls. Before we run out of time, Andy, I want to talk about yesterday's primary elections. We'll talk about some of Wisconsin's coming up in a few. But there were a couple congressional races that got a lot of attention, one Republican, one Democrat. Let's start in Georgia and this Republican primary. What came out there and why are people focused on it?
So, yeah, there was a Republican primary in Georgia yesterday where Marjorie Taylor Greene won the primary. And she is notable. I mean, it's a safe seat. So a Republican, it's a safe Republican seat. So the Republican nominee is going to represent that seat after the general election, presumably. And the reason Greene's victory has gotten so much attention is that she has had kind of this affiliation or this, connection to the conspiracy theory group QAnon, and this is a very kind of complicated conspiracy group that's predominantly takes place online that the FBI has labeled as a domestic terrorism threat. And so her connections to this group is something that we'll probably start hearing a lot more about. There will probably be a lot of Democratic criticism of some of the things she's saying. There were some Republicans who are frustrated with her victory because they're worried about things that she says and things that she has said becoming kind of an albatross around Republicans' necks and something that Democrats are going to point to as evidence of kind of the extremist nature of the Republican Party. This is a dynamic we saw in Iowa with Steve King. He was someone who has said that he basically has expressed sympathy for white supremacy explicitly and has kind of enmeshed himself in a whole bunch of different problematic things. And so he was someone that Republicans were eager to get out of their party, and he lost his primary recently, and Republicans were thankful for that, or a lot of, top Republicans were, because they could kind of start to shed this image of the party having these connections to some of these fringe and extremist elements. But now with her victory, that is again going to possibly be a problem for the Republican Party.
Closer to home in Minnesota, Democrat Ilhan Omar faced a primary challenge, and she won that one. Again, this got a lot of attention. Talk us through this race in our last minute or so.
Yeah, so she, Representative Omar, won her primary, and this was closely watched because her opponent had raised a pretty significant amount of money, and there was a fair amount of momentum, it seemed like, behind him. He had been critical of basically Representative Omar's national standing. She is someone who has, you know, been very vocal as a very actively liberal member of the so-called squad. She has also had drawn a fair amount of controversy in terms of some of the things she said about some of the Democratic parties and congressional relationship with Israel. And so he basically ran as someone who said that, you know, our representative should not be such a national figure, should not be someone who's embroiled in so much controversy. And he raised a whole lot of money doing so, but still fell short. So it was kind of seen as an early litmus test or another litmus test of kind of how, you know, local constituents feel when their representatives become these kind of national figureheads for broader ideological causes.
Andy, thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Wall Street Journal congressional reporter Andy Duren. He joined us for a look at some of the week's top stories in national politics, including reactions to presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden picking California Senator Kamala Harris to be his running mate, as well as the coronavirus recovery stalemate in Congress. And as we heard, there are a couple primary results in Georgia and Minnesota. Later in the show, we're going to talk more about the vice president, this pick this week, but also big changes in the role of the vice president as running mate and from going to a non-figure into the White House to a pretty important figure. We'll talk about how the vice presidency has changed over time. That's coming up later here on Central Time.